Srila Prabhupada, one has to become faithful by practicing the controlling process of the yoga system and must elevate himself to the platform of unalloyed devotional service by chanting and hearing about me. Please repeat after me. One has to become faithful by practicing the controlling process of the yoga system and must elevate himself to the platform of unalloyed devotional service by chanting and hearing about me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Yoga is practiced in 8 different stages: jam, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. Jama and niyama mean practicing the controlling process by following strict regulations. And asana refers to the sitting postures. These help raise one to the standard of faithfulness in devotional service. The practice of yoga by physical exercise is not the ultimate goal. The real aim is to concentrate and to control the mind and train oneself to be situated in faithful devotional service. Bhavena or bhava is a very important factor in the practice of yoga or in any spiritual process. Bhava is explained in Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Buddha Bhava Samannita. One should be absorbed in the thought of love of Krishna. When one knows that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the source of everything and that everything emanates from Him, Aham Sarvasya Prabhava, then one understands the Vedanta aphorism, Janmadasya Jataha, the origin of source of everything. And then he can become absorbed in bhava, or the preliminary stage of love of Godhead. Rupa Goswami explains very nicely in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu how this bhava, or preliminary stage of love of God, is achieved. He states that one first of all has to become faithful, shraddhayannita. Faith is attained by controlling the senses, either by yoga practice, following the rules and regulations and practicing the sitting postures, or by engaging directly in bhakti yoga as recommended in the previous verse. In the 9 different items of bhakti yoga, the first and foremost is to chant and hear about the Lord. That is also mentioned here, matkatha shravanena va. Matkatha shravanena cha. One may come to the standard of faithfulness by following the rules and regulations of the yoga system, and the same goal can be achieved simply by chanting and hearing about the transcendental activities of the Lord. The word cha is significant. Bhakti yoga is direct, and the other process is indirect. But even if the indirect process is taken, there is no success unless one comes fully to the direct process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Therefore, the word satyena is used here. In this connection, Swami Sridhara comments that satyena means nishkapatena, without duplicity. The impersonalists are full of duplicity. Sometimes they pretend to execute devotional service, but their ultimate idea is to become one with the Supreme. This is duplicity, kapata. The Bhagavatam does not allow this duplicity. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is clearly stated, Paramo Nirmatsaranam. This treatise, Srimad Bhagavatam, is meant for those who are completely free from envy. The same point is again stressed here. Unless one is completely faithful to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engages himself in the process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, there is no possibility for liberation. Jamadibhir yoga pathai abhashan sradhayannitaha mai bhavena satyena matkatha Shravanena cha. One has to become faithful by practicing the controlling process of the yoga system and must elevate himself to the platform of unalloyed devotional service by hearing, by chanting and hearing about me. Om Abhyanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manodhishthan Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padamaiham Dadapi Swapadantikam. Mukam Karoti Bachalam Pungum Langhayate Vidim Jat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Vimataranam. Banchakalpatarubhascha Kripashindhubhaye Vacha Patitanam Pavanibho Vaishnavetra Namo. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Jai Shri Sudama Madhava Ji, Jai Shri Mahaprabhu Ji, Jai Shri Sudama Ji, Shri Shri Prabhupada Nitya Deva Ji. So, these chapters, in these chapters, Kapildev, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is explaining Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya philosophy means the analytical study of this Vedic wisdom or the material nature. The material nature is a very strange place where we all have somehow got entangled. This material nature has been compared to a prison house, and somehow we have become prisoners here. And in the prison house, one undergoes various kinds of punishment. Similarly, in this material nature, we are suffering various kinds of punishment. In the material nature, every living entity is undergoing various kinds of misery. Generally, those miseries have been classified in three categories. They are adhi-atmi, adhi-bhauti, and adhi-daiti places. The misery is caused by our body and mind. The misery is caused by other living entities. And misery is caused by natural calamity. Now, in this material nature, everyone is subjected to these threefold miseries. So, naturally, an intelligent person questions. He wonders, I don't want to suffer, but why am I suffering? So when one realizes that he is suffering, he actually comes to the senses. Generally, if somebody thinks that he is enjoying his in the prison house, then there is no possibility of becoming free from his imprisonment. Similarly, those who think that they are enjoying in this material nature, for them it is practically impossible to get out of the bondage of this material nature. Those who are enjoying, actually everyone is suffering. But when one considers the suffering to be enjoyment, that is called illusion. It is like in the prison house, someone is being whipped. And the person is laughing, he is thinking, oh, this whipping is so nice. Then is he what we consider him to be? People will say that he is a madman. If he beats somebody and if he laughs and if he thinks that he is enjoying it, is it a sign of intelligence? No. Similarly, those who think that they are enjoying in this material nature, they have been considered to be mad people, unmada. Unmada means mad. So, sanity is when one realizes that he is suffering in this material. And actually it doesn't take very long to realize that point, that we all are suffering in this material. Actually, the Maya, or the illusory energy of the Lord, has two aspects. One is called Avaranatmika, and other is called Dikshakama. The one, with a one potency, Maya's one activity is that one becomes covered. His intelligence, his consciousness, his memory becomes covered. And the other one is that it throws him away from the Supreme Personality of God. The Maya in one way covers the living entity by the ignorance, avidya, and the other is Maya takes the living entity away from Krishna. And due to the influence of Maya, a living entity does not realize that he is suffering. He doesn't realize because his intelligence has become covered, so he doesn't know, his memory has become covered, so he doesn't know what his actual position was like. Actually, a living entity was enjoying in the spiritual sense. A living entity by his constitutional position is joyful. And when he becomes situated in his constitutional position, he naturally becomes joyful. But a living entity has forgotten about that joyful state of existence, and therefore, a living entity just accepts this misery of this material nature as its destiny. A living entity thinks, well, what can be done? I'm here. And after all, this is a nice place. And a living entity thinks, I don't want to die in this beautiful world. Every living entity thinks this. I do not want to die and this world is so beautiful. But actually, a living entity doesn't have any idea how dangerous and how miserable this material nature is. And when a living entity feels that he is suffering, actually everybody goes through this kind of suffering, adi atmik, adi daivik and adi bhogi, that cannot be denied. But a living entity being bewildered thinks that, well, tomorrow I'll be. Today I'm suffering, tomorrow I'll be. Today I've got cancer, but tomorrow I'll become cured. This is the state of his intelligence. And this is all due to the illusory energy of the Lord, or Maya. Due to the illusion, due to the illusory energy of the Lord, or Lord, Maya, Mahamaya, a living entity has become bewildered in this. Therefore, Krishna, right at the time of creation, actually even before living entities started to come into this material nature, started to become active in this material nature, Krishna gave the transcendental knowledge, and that is the Veda. Krishna gave the Veda at the time of creation. Why? So that living entities can understand what his actual position is like. Now, because we are in ignorance, we are accepting this material nature as the absolute truth. And our situation in the material nature is the only state that we can possibly be in. But when we approach the Vedas, or if we, by chance, or by due to our good fortune, come across the Vedic wisdom, then we actually get to know what this material nature is, what our constitutional position is, and who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, and how we can become situated in our lost relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this way, the Vedas are essential for civilized and intelligent human beings. And this Vedic wisdom actually has been presented here by Kapil Dev in the form of his Sankhya philosophy. In one sense, it can be said that Sankhya philosophy is the summary of the entire Vedic wisdom. Actually, it is an analytical summary. The philosophy is there, the entire wisdom has been given, but in a very systematic way, Kapil Dev has presented it, so that an intelligent person can very easily understand what is the real state of affairs in this material nature and what is the spiritual reality. In the previous chapters, Kapil Dev described two aspects, Karja and Karana. The material manifestation has two aspects. One is the causal aspect and the other is effectual aspect. Now what is the cause of this creation and what is the effect of this creation? That has been very, very systematically explained by Kapil Dev, and I'm sure you all have studied that, and if you did not, then please read that, because that part is very important in order to understand what is this material nature like. He actually analyzed how at the beginning this material nature was in an unmanifested state of death. And then from the unmanifested state, gradually it became manifested or vacuous due to the glance of the Supreme Personality of God. This material nature has the ingredients. Actually, material nature also is eternal. This material nature is not temporary or non-ashat. Material nature also, because it is Krishna's energy, it is also eternal. But this material nature remains in an unmanifest state for some time, and then sometimes it becomes manifest. So this material nature has 24 different ingredients of creation. But those 24 elements cannot become active unless and until the Supreme Personality of Godhead activates. In this respect, Prabhupada gives the example that all the ingredients may be there for making a machine, but unless a person comes and puts them together, the machine won't. Some other place Prabhupada gave the example of a motor car. The car is there, the car has the ability to move, but unless and until the driver is there, a living person activates the car, starts the ignition and makes it move, the car will not function, car will not move. So similarly, the material nature cannot be active unless and until the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna becomes involved. And Krishna's involvement is through his glance. Krishna simply glances towards the material nature. And that also is not Krishna himself. It is Krishna's part of the part of the part of the part of the part, Mahavishnu. And when Mahavishnu glances at the material nature, Mahavishnu's glance actually activates the material nature in the form of, and what is the glance of Mahavishnu? The Mahavishnu's glance is the time factor. So the 24 aspects of the material nature has been described in the Sankhya philosophy. But then Kapila Dev is introducing the 25th factor, and that is the time factor. And unless and until the time factor is there, nothing can become manifest, so nothing can become. And in this way, Kapil Dev explained that the glance of Mahavishnu is the time factor, which is the Sanskrit word for that is Kala. And so in this way, the causal aspect, the cause of creation has been described, and then the effect of creation also has been described by Kapila Dev in Sankhya philosophy. That is how different senses and how different objects of the senses and the elements of the material nature became manifested. Initially, there was pradhan, and then when the pradhan becomes activated by the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or by the involvement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is the Mahasatra. And then Mahasatra becomes affected by the three modes of material. There are mode of goodness, there is mode of passion and mode of ignorance. And when this false ego becomes affected by these three modes, they actually give rise to different aspects of creation, different ingredients for becoming active in this material. Due to vaikarik ahankar or due to the false ego, affected by the mode of goodness, mind is produced. Due to the influence of passion in false ego or tejas ahankar, different senses are produced and intelligence also is produced. Or due to the mode of, due to the influence of goodness, mind and the demigods are produced. Then due to the mode of passion, different senses are produced along with intelligence, and due to the mode of ignorance, different elements of the material nature are produced. And also, it has been described how the Virat Purusha, the universal form of the Lord, develops different aspects of knowledge, acquiring senses, and working. Now, in this chapter, Kapildev is explaining how different processes are there to become elevated to the spiritual platform or to become connected to the Supreme Personality of God. Here he is explaining about the Ashtanga Yoga system. The Ashtanga Yoga means the Eightfold Yoga system. These eight aspects of yoga are Jam, Niyam, Asam, Pranayam, Pratyahar, Dhyan, Dharana, and Samadhi. This yoga system Prabhupada described as a physical endeavor to situate oneself on the spiritual plane. It is a physical endeavor. With our own endeavor, we are trying to elevate ourselves to the spiritual plane, becoming free from the material bondage. And it has also been explained that it's actually a very, very difficult process. It's a very difficult process, and although this process was considered to be bona fide in Sapta Yuga, but in this age of Kali, it is practically impossible for anyone. If we consider that this material nature is like a prison house, then we can consider that these different aspects of spiritual practices, these different spiritual practices are the means of getting out of the prison. One is in the prison and he is suffering. As I mentioned, like an intelligent person, a sane person realizes that he is suffering in this material nature. So naturally, when one realizes that he is suffering, he wants to get out of this suffering condition. Now, one is in the prison and he is undergoing various kinds of punishment. So naturally, what he wants to do, he wants to get out of the prison. Now, how can one get out of the prison? There are different ways of getting out of the prison. One can run away from the prison. Can't he? He can either scale the wall or dig a tunnel out of the prison and he can run away. Other one is he sees that the prison is a bad place and he makes all kinds of arrangements to get out of it. Not running away, but get out of it by means of his own endeavor.
And another way is that one realizes what is the cause of his imprisonment. And he rectifies himself. He analyzes the cause of his imprisonment and he purifies himself or rectifies himself of that defect. And that's how he gets out of the prison. The spiritual side, by becoming liberated from the material bondage, is compared to a person who is trying to run away from the prison. So a person who tries to run away from the prison, he is a Mayavadi. Mayavadi is the person who can be compared to a person who is trying to run away. Like Mayavadi, they forcibly get out of the prison without rectifying their defect. Actually, one is in prison because he has committed a crime. And the best way to get out of the prison is to rectify oneself of that defect. But instead of rectifying his defect when one tries to get out of the prison, then that is extremely criminal. And that is the condition of an impersonalist. Actually, what is the cause of a living entity's imprisonment? The cause of a living entity's imprisonment is his rejection of the authority of the Supreme Personality of God. The living entity has become imprisoned or bound by the material nature because he has rejected Krishna. Now, if one does not accept the authority of Krishna, but thinks that he can get out of this material nature, and he thinks that he, when he gets out of the material nature, he will become Krishna himself. So that is the worst crime. Like a criminal, thinks that if, as soon as he gets out of the prison house, if somehow or other he can get out of the prison house, then he will become the king. So that is the position of a Mayavadi. So a person, even if he succeeds, first of all, in Krishna's kingdom and from Krishna's prison, it is impossible to get out. But even from the material prison or an ordinary prison, if one gets out in this way, then does he actually become free? No. First of all, he will have to hide all the time and he will be in constant anxiety that the police will come and catch him. So he will have to hide in all kinds of places. So that is the position of a Mayavad. Therefore, Mayavad is considered to be a negative thing. Therefore, it has been rejected by any intelligent person. Anyone who wants his own benefit in a true sense must reject Mayavad. And it has been rejected in such a way that the advice has been given, that if you see a Mayavadi, then immediately you must take bath. And not only you must take bath, with your clothes on, you must jump into water. That is how one must avoid the association of a Mayavadi. Why? Because the Mayavadi philosophy is extremely dangerous. Now, a person who tries to rectify himself of his defect is a yogi. He knows that he has some problem and by dint of his own endeavor, he tries to correct himself. That is a yogi. And a person who recognizes his mistake and recognizes that the law has been created by the king and he appeals to the king, he writes a letter to the king, that, my lord, I realize my mistake. I know it is because of rejecting your authority, defying your authority, and due to defying your laws that I have become imprisoned. So I have realized my mistake. So I I beg you to excuse me, beg you to forgive me from this. So a person who takes this attitude, for him, actually freedom from his imprisonment becomes very easy. A person who writes to the king in this way, after realizing his mistake, what happens generally? The king says, okay, this person has recognized his mistake, so let him get out of the prison. So who falls in this category in the spiritual context? Anyone can answer this question? What happened?
Okay.
Krishna. Devotee realizes the cause of his imprisonment. And in order to rectify the cause, he actually appeals to the Supreme Personality of God. And tells him, my Lord, I have recognized my mistake and I'm never going to commit the same mistake. And from now on, I will accept your offer. And from now on, I'll simply utilize my existence for the sake of rendering service unto you. And from now on, I'll simply try to give pleasure to you. So that is the position of a devotee. And even in Sankhya philosophy, Kapiladev time and time again pointed out that point. Although yoga and other processes have been described, like he's pointing out in this particular verse and the verse before, that yes, yoga process is there, but it is simply meant to become surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of God. Unless and until one surrenders unto Krishna, then this yoga process will not have any positive effect. There is no benefit. There will never be any benefit by practicing this yoga. What will happen if somebody practices yoga without accepting the authority of Krishna? What will happen? Even if he attains success or siddhi, what will happen? He'll become a big demon, like Akhasura, Bakasura, Trinavartasura, Arishtasura, Venukasura. They all were actually big yogis. But what actually they became, although they had mystic perfection, they could transform themselves into any form. Putana, she transformed herself into such a beautiful woman that everyone thought that Lakshmi Devi herself appeared. Agasura transformed himself into a snake, a huge snake, so big that the cowherd boys mistook that the mouth of the snake to be a cave. And they walked into the stomach of that snake. So such a huge snake, Agasura could become a snake like that. Trinavartasura was even more wonderful. His power was even more wonderful. He simply transformed himself into a cyclone, a huge, huge tornado. And he didn't even say, actually Trinavartasura thought that Putana came with a form and Sapadasura came with a form. Therefore Krishna could kill him. Now I will get Krishna without taking any form. Therefore he won't be able to kill me. So he came in the form of a tremendous whirlwind. And he actually came and took Krishna up high in the sky. So in this way, the demons also have mystic perfection. They are the yogis. Now what is the difference? Why they ended up becoming a demon? Because they did not accept the authority of the Supreme Personality of God. Now if somebody accepts the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then his life will prosper. Even if he doesn't become a big yogi, even if he doesn't become a big person, still he will become successful.
Because the ultimate goal of life is to become surrendered to the Supreme Personality of God. And when one surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the goal of his life doesn't become to become big. But his goal of life becomes to become small. His goal of life becomes how to become small. Therefore, a devotee does not want to become big. Therefore, devotees don't actually care for this yoga practice, because the yoga increases unless it is applied properly under the guidance of a qualified teacher. The yoga inflates our false ego. But our business is actually to get rid of false ego. So a devotee who has become free from his false ego and has become a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his life has become most successful. The ultimate perfection is to become a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of God. So the ultimate aim of life is to become a menial servant, a humble servant of the Lord and His devotees. So that conclusion Kapildev will come to gradually. He has already made this point, but gradually he established this point very clearly. And in this way, we can see that the ultimate conclusion of the Vedas is to become a devotee of the Supreme Personality. Hare Krishna. Jai Shri Sri Radha Madhava ki. Jai Shaman Mahaprabhu ki. Shri Radha Madhava ki. So does anybody have any question? You mean the universe is coming from Mahavishnu's body? First of all, you have to understand that we are dealing with a subject which is all-seeing, inconceivable. And the next thing we have to remember is Angyani Darsha Shakalindriya Vritti Mantri, that Krishna can perform all different actions through all different senses. So that's why, although in the Bhagavatam these two analogies have been given, one is to Mahavishnu's glance and the other is the universe is coming from breathing, we have to take both as the absolute truth. And we have to understand that these are, with our tiny little brain, we can't conceive. Like, we can't conceive what is the difference between Mahavishnu's glance and Mahavishnu's breathing. But, and also we have to understand that certain analogies are given in the Vedas to make it conceivable for, to make the inconceivable conceivable to our tiny little brain. So the safest way is to accept all the statements of the Vedas. But when the Vedas are saying that from the Karanada Kshay Vishnu, the bubbles are the universes, that's also absolute truth. At the same time, his glancing at Prakriti is also an absolute truth. And anyway. Yeah.
That then how that is clear from Mahaprabhu,
Yes. Our prakriti exists separately. And but as I said, like prakriti remains in an unmanifested stage. And you see, like there are two considerations, drashta and drishya. Sight and the seeing and the observer. The seeing may be there, but if the observer is not there, then the seeing will not become manifest. Right? So, unless, see, everything may be there in the material nature. Just as it is, maybe the cities are there, the houses are there, everything is there, palaces are there, all are there intact. But if all the spirit souls are taken away, will there be anyone to experience? Or will there be anyone to see that these are existing in the material? No. So it's somewhat like that, that nature exists, but because no observer is there, it's the material nature, it is unmanifest. The manifestation of the material nature is due to the observer. And that the ultimate observer is Mahavishnu himself. He glances. So he observes. Right? And then through his glance, the living entities are impregnated in the womb of the material. The living entities observe the material. And this way, the material nature becomes man. So, okay, I'll stop now. Thank you all very much. All glory to Shri Krishna.